It is time for the Friday Newscap and some voices from the news this week.
We know that people in Arizona are tired of the chaos in our elections. They're tired of our elections being an embarrassment and having to go to your friends out of state when it's election time. Oh, I'm from Arizona. You know how our elections are. No, they don't want that.
This creates finality on this issue. It gets the conversation moving in a direction of let's break ground and start construction and let's go build a great project.
The most important thing is you have to want to win. And I know that sounds weird, but Democrats have been wanting to win without pissing off anybody, right? We're so afraid of our own internal coalitions that we sometimes mess up our victories.
I think, quite frankly, it's a home run for my staff that did amazing work to put all this together, and we intend to continue going forward.
If you increase the number of signatures being rejected, do you think that increases the trust in elections?
This is a huge milestone for the state of Arizona. We have huge water challenges facing us, and this is going to be a key tool for us to be able to deal with those challenges.
You can refuse illegal orders.
You can refuse illegal orders.
You must refuse illegal orders.
And with me to talk about a proposal to change the way elections are run in Arizona, a new poll looking at the governor's race and more, are Marcus Delartino of First Strategic. Marcus, good morning.
Good morning.
And Dawn Penich of Agave Strategy. Dawn, good morning to you.
Hello.
Marcus, we heard from a state representative, Alexander Colladin, in the montage just now, saying that Arizonans are tired of chaos in our elections, which is one of the reasons he is putting forward the Arizona Secure Elections Act. Do you think Arizonans are tired of chaos in our elections?
I wish we would rephrase that a little bit. I don't think there is chaos in our elections. I think what people are trying to say is we would like to have a result quicker, faster. Right now, it might take weeks to count those ballots that people are dropping off at the polls. I don't want to be the person who gives everybody bad news, but 90% of the time, the people that are complaining are the people that are causing the problem. those are the people that walk into the polling place and drop their ballots in the bin. And we went through this last session. There was a number of proposals mm-hmm. to sort of tackle this issue. I think that we are closer to a solution now. It sounds like, you know, like Tom Galvin from the county has got some energy behind some of these solutions. I am a little bit more cautious just because I think when voters it's going to take a lot of voter training to convince people that you cannot drop your ballot off on election day in a bin. And there will be a lot of angst, I think, on that first try that we do that.
Well, when you say that we're getting closer to a solution, do you think this is it?
I think parts of it are. I think that, you know, largely based around that ability to count ballots faster, that election mm-hmm. night is certainly election night. And, you know, you should have the answer by whatever, 1 a.m. But it's certainly in the morning you wake up and you'll have sort of finality to the election. I think that that is probably where we're headed. I think there are some provisions in here that are probably a little bit more controversial.
Well, so, Dawn, one of the items, or I guess one of the sections that's been fairly controversial to Marcus's point, is what to do with early voting. And this would say that all early ballots have to be cast by 7 o'clock at night on the Friday before Election Day. If you're on the active early voting list, I'd basically do away with that because every 2 years you'd have to reaffirm the address that you want your ballot sent to. Is this a solution to trying to get results faster?
I mean, these are ideas, but what my main concern is that we're starting to use this notion of election security and improvement as just a code word for what, in effect, is actually disenfranchising people who many of these proposers want to see voting less, want to see, you know, kind of cut out of the system, like younger voters, like people who, you know, work two jobs just to make it, you know, just to make rent and don't have the kind of flexibility that these kinds of changes would necessitate. Not only have I not ever thought of Arizona's election system as chaotic, I have, and many people have had the opposite reaction from folks in other states of, you guys get to, you know, vote by mail. You get to drop off your ballots. You have all these options to make sure that people get to vote the way they want to. That's amazing. Other states hate the limited options that they have. And look, have often over decades looked to Arizona to actually expand access to voting and the many wonderful programs that we have here. So would it be nice to know a little earlier? Sure, lots of people say that, but I don't think that that has a higher premium for most Arizona voters than the convenience that we have all gotten very used to, including dropping your ballot off on Election Day.
So, Dawn, this is a proposal that Governor Hobbs would not interact with. This would go directly to the voters if the legislature passes it. Is there reason to think the legislature won't pass this?
Well, once they get into that game of, you know, those direct referrals to the ballot and the calculus around who's going to come out for which ones and importantly, whether there's going to be any money or desire to publicize what they've now put on the ballot, that's when things start to fall apart. We've seen many times in the past, you know, the legislature will put all kinds of stuff on the ballot and then somehow they just kind of fade away because no one wanted to then do the homework of explaining this to voters, putting money into a campaign. So at the end of the day, that's how we see a lot of these ideas that we're hear about in December, January, February, eventually just kind of fade into nothing. Whether the election integrity probably isn't one of those. This is the drumbeat at, you know, municipal, statewide and federal levels. But what kinds of changes it undergoes, I think this is not the version that we'll ultimately see.
Yeah, Marcus, I mean, the bill right now, the referendum is, I think, a page long, so a little bit short on details at the moment. Presumably, to Don's point, it'll get fleshed out a little bit. Assuming that the legislature passes it, and of course, we're a little less than a year away from the actual election, so a lot can happen. But this is, as Don said, this is a big issue for a lot of voters, especially a lot of Republican voters.
Yeah, I mean, there's no denying that. It's been the drumbeat for 8 years. But I would also, you know, sometimes I caution my Republican friends, take a breath here for a second and put it in context of the fact that Republicans have dominated early voting since its inception. We invented it, we mastered it, and we beat the Democrats every single election cycle on early voting. So to that end, put that – so when you make these changes, keep that in mind that you very well may be causing a bigger problem than a solution. But that being said, I think that there will be some sort of resolution on parts of this resolution that Colladan, Representative Colladan's put forward, and I expect voters will see something at the ballot. To the end of who's going to fund it, I would expect – now, going out on a limb here, I haven't talked to anybody about it, but I would expect Turning Point would probably be adamantly against it. But then again, I've seen initiatives where they've taken a pass too. I mean, there was, you know, Arizona's got a significant tax increase on the special health care district that I thought at some point Turning Point would show up and fight against a tax increase, and they didn't. So I don't – it's it's a difficult cycle to predict.
One more quick thing on elections before we move on, Marcus. I want to get your take on the numbers from this most recent election. We heard this week some debate about the number of signatures that were rejected by the county recorder's office being about three times as high as in recent elections. We heard just a moment ago Recorder Heap saying this is great. We heard Supervisor Galvin saying this is not great. Does this portend anything going into next year's midterms?
More of the same, I would expect.
More signatures being rejected.
Right. And I'll be honest with you. I mean, it's sort of a personal problem for me because I don't put my phone number down on my ballot when I return it because I don't really want more government entities having my phone number. So I have no idea whether my vote got counted or not. I'm going to go back, obviously, and look and see. But it gives you sort of a point on, you know, how this can affect voters. Now, Senator Gallego, I think, popped up and said, you know, he does put his phone number on his ballot.
And said so that he had to cure his ballot during this last election.
He did. But I think that – I do think it's – when you look back historically on how many have been rejected and you triple that number, it is cause for a concern. You are disenfranchising some voters. And my question is, let's go through and analyze, who did we disenfranchise? Was it more Republicans or was it more Democrats?
Yeah, I wonder if this is a matter of you know, you could make the argument not enough were being rejected before. Too many votes were being counted that shouldn't. You could make the argument that votes this time that should have been counted weren't. Is there a way to really find out, like, what the right number is, what the sweet spot is?
Yeah. I mean, if nothing else, then I think that we need to continue to look at this issue. And it looks like the supervisors are very interested in exactly what happened here as a test balloon of what is the process going forward. Heap says that this was a result of him making improvements to how these signatures are checked. You know, election workers can see more signatures to compare that ballot to. He put a bipartisan review committee instead of just one person looking at their own, you know, kind of judgment two times. So those might be true improvements. But in the bigger context of this is one county recorder, then we have the bill by Colleton and others in the legislature. Then we're hearing the same things from the Trump administration about possibly, you know, putting National Guard and intervening in state elections. When you look at all of that together, everything has to be looked at, and it is up to the press, the public, the supervisors to not let anything go unquestioned ahead of what we all agree is going to be the most controversial, the most high tension election cycle any of us have ever heard of.
Which I feel is what people have been saying for the last couple of election cycles, right? The most intense, the most sort of highly partisan, controversial, tense. Like, this sounds like you think it's just going to be a continuation of what we've been seeing the last number of years.
Well, yeah. And I think that some of the new people, you know, when last cycle, when you had, you know, Republicans on one side with some of these election integrity, quote unquote, bills and efforts. But then you had a county recorder like Stephen Richer saying, everybody calm down. We're doing this the right way. Well, now those personalities have changed. Now we have an election denier as our county recorder. And so it's not just more of the same. I think this is cause for even more attention and care and possibly alarm.
Marcus, let me ask you briefly about a bit of a kerfuffle between President Trump and some members of Congress, including Senator Mark Kelly. They put out a video basically saying if you are in the military or the intelligence community, it is your duty to ignore or refuse illegal orders. The president and some of his administrative team didn't like this, and the president says that they should basically be convicted of treason, which, of course, comes with the punishment of execution. Like, what do you make of this whole episode?
I just want everybody to go back to work. Can I just be selfish? Can you guys just all – everybody stop talking and go do something. Pass a bill. Make good public policy. I think everybody's lost, and I think we all knew it was coming, but we've lost sort of that sense of Charlie Kirk's assassination. And this poor guy got killed for his public and political speech. And now we've got a bunch of politicians that are out amping the fire once again. Now, I just really wish everybody just quit screwing around with the chain of command. Let generals do their job. I don't need a senator telling a general how to do his job, just like I don't need anybody else to do it. I think it was a – you know, I think that there's enough wrong going around on both sides on this particular issue. I know that's probably not a popular opinion because everybody wants to root for their team. But I think that there's other things that we could be concentrating on as a country and uniting right now rather than threatening with each other to be hung in a public square.
Yeah, this doesn't really seem like a – To paraphrase former President Bush, to be a uniter, not a divider.
And no, but, you know, to disagree, as you predicted I would, Marcus, with my friend here, I think that these representatives who made this video do see this as doing their job because this didn't come out of nowhere. This comes out of a reality where the military is being sent into American cities under the claim that there is violence happening, but, you know, the mayors and the people who live in those cities haven't seen that yet. So, you know, the military is being, you know, ordered to do things in foreign waters that are questionable. And so these are former service members themselves saying, hey, this is the law. And I think that that is their job as elected members of Congress and as, you know, former military and intelligence folks themselves. And so, you know, did they need to pick this moment to make that case? this is a moment where the Trump administration continues to say that they want to find ways to militarize our country. And so, yeah, I think that the stating of an existing law being called traitorous is astounding. And, you know, I know that there are so many things that are astounding and irregular, and that's exactly the playbook. But just dismissing it as trying to fan flames, I don't think is fair.
I would – here's what I would say. There is not one 18 – unless somebody brings me an example, I don't believe that there's one 18-year-old kid in the military who woke up and said, oh, my God, Mark Kelly told me not to do that. I'm not going to do it. It just doesn't work
well,
like that.
Well, I think it's an awareness thing.
For these kids, it just – I think it achieved – you know, probably what these senators wanted to do, which was get some media attention and fan the flames. I just don't think that that's how a military kid mind works, that, you know, I'm in the U.S. Army and I can't wait to hear from my U.S. senator on what I should do.
Guys, let's go to something maybe a little lighter. if one can say a public poll is light, I don't know. But we saw a poll this week from Emerson College looking at Arizona's governor's race. And in the primary – and Marcus, let me start with you because it was it's the Republican primary. It had Congressman Andy Biggs with a pretty hefty lead over Karen Taylor Robeson and David Schweikert. 50% for Biggs, 17% for Robeson, 8% for Schweikert. And in fact, the second biggest group was undecided, which maybe isn't surprising, you know, a little less than a year out. Obviously, a poll, snapshot in time. It's a million years away from when ballots are actually count. I'm just trying to preempt what you're going to tell me here. I can see the wheels turning here. What do you make, if anything, of these numbers?
Nothing.
Okay.
Look, let me do my standard disclaimer here. This is the time of year where we just have a bunch of polls come out because people want their name read on the radio or the TV that, yippee, look at me, I did a poll. And I will tell you that there were some factors in the science of how this poll was conducted that I wasn't particularly comfortable with. Here's what I would say. This is cute. It's fun to talk about. If I were running a campaign and it was my job to put together the strategy and the tactics, I would throw this thing right in the trash can. It's of no value to me whatsoever. That being said, it is cute and entertaining. I think for Governor Hobbs has got to be pleased on where she is in this particular survey. Republican voter registration's increasing. It's not static. And so her campaign's going to be – it's going to be a tougher campaign for her this cycle. To be up a point on either of these candidates is good news for her. I think Mr. Biggs has a lot to be pleased about, certainly in this poll. But I don't – you know, it changes – this is a snapshot of a day. Mm-hmm. David Schweikert is pounding the airwaves right now. You can't turn on the morning news without seeing a David Schweikert ad where he's trying to define himself. So these numbers are literally already old. They're going to change.
So, Dawn, Marcus made the point that Governor Hobbs in this poll, whatever its validity, is up a little bit over both Biggs and Taylor Robeson by, I think, a point each, a little bit more over Schweikert. But, of course, he's sort of the late entrant into this race. Do you make anything of this poll at this moment, this number of months away from Election Day?
Yeah, I agree with Marcus that this is – and we're going to continue to see these that are way too early and taking a snapshot of a time that is essentially irrelevant at almost a year away. But that said, it's definitely better than, you know, if it shows something else, because there are so many more Republicans and independents than Democrats, that for a Democratic governor to be right up there with, you know, people who have a lot more voter constituents in this state is great. And that is on purpose. That is partially because these names, while they are, you know, former members of Congress, they are less known. That is the power of an incumbency. So you only know who these guys are if you're already paying attention, which most voters aren't. But also it's because of Hobbs' very deliberate campaigning and work to paint herself as a governor who can bring order, who can bring a nonpartisan approach to the state and just be focused on our business and our future and our key issues. And she's working hard to paint herself that way. And this kind of number reflects that that's resonating with a number of Republicans even. So that's good news for them.
Marcus, a little bit further down the ballot, the Attorney General's race got a new entrant this this week. Greg Roberg says he worked alongside President Trump on election integrity issues. This is a primary that already has two Republicans in it, with Senate President Warren Peterson and Rodney Glassman. First of all, like, what do we know about this guy, and why would he be getting in now?
Almost virtually nothing. I mean, his social media has been scrubbed, or he never posted anything, which I think would be odd. But there's almost virtually, other than what you said, very little known about him. And so he's certainly got a lot of work to define himself. But as I like to remind people, it's not super easy to get on the ballot. You've got to collect a lot of signatures from throughout the state.
Which takes time.
And it takes time. And it takes money. And so I've still got some questions about sort of where his fundraising base is and how that will sort of develop. If you start to see a lot of money, you know, from Virginia and Maryland and other locations with certain names that would indicate he's in the Trump circle, it might tell you more than we know now. But I would also tell you it'd be sort of a weird spot, because I know Senate President Peterson, who's obviously campaigning, has been back to the White House, has been meeting with those people in that Trump sphere. So this there's a lot to flush out in that Republican primary.
Yeah, Don, very briefly, and at the risk of having you wade into internal Republican politics, it's not like the people who are running already in this primary are not aligning themselves with President Trump.
Right. I don't know. This is such a weird one. Nobody knows who this guy is. It almost – my first reaction was honestly, is this some kind of weird spoiler thing? Like what is happening here? Mm. So we'll see what actually happens. But it's interesting, yeah, that he – no one can find any information on him, even his own claims. It's impossible to back them up. It's very strange.
Interesting. All right. Don Penich, Marcus Dellartino, thanks you guys both. Happy Thanksgiving.
Thank you. Happy
you
Thanksgiving.
As well.